Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson Baltimore, Baltimore Positive, and AM 1570. Make sure you're setting your dial with us as we get into baseball and football here. Lots of politics we're going to be doing this month. Lots of crab cake tours, all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Have the Gold Rush Sevens doublers at Coco's this week. By the time we get going next week and get the Coopers for the Fells Point Oyster Festival next Friday, we're going to be down there with Chad Wiesling as well as Dave Shinen from the Washington Post. We will have the Ravens scratch-offs in our possession. We're going to be at Coco's with Mark Viviano on Wednesday of this week before the Kansas City game. And then crab cake tours, Oyster Day every day for 26 years. We are celebrating our 26th anniversary here at WNST. All of it brought to you by our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions. They keep our water clean. They keep your well water clean, and they can take care of your plumbing needs. You can visit them at libertypure.com. Also, our friends at Jiffy Lube, Multi Care, making the oil run. My little orange light's on. I got to get over to the Jiffy Lube in Timonium, right across the street from Curio Wellness and from Far and Daughter, right at York and Timonium Road. So big appreciation to all of our sponsors as we begin football season. I have been writing at length all summer long. You are going to begin reading my writings. A letter to Eric DaCosta will be out by the time you check this out. And if you're a Pearl Jam fan, you'll really like it. Luke is here. Luke is ready for Thursday night. I am ready for Thursday night. I'm almost ready for Friday morning already to get this over with and see whether they're going to win or lose. Ravens are underdogs going out to Kansas City. Lots of questions about the Ravens. And I'm sure in Kansas City, lots of questions about the Chiefs, even in the aftermath of winning another world championship there and have another Super Bowl parade. Luke, the questions for the Ravens, we talked so much about Lamar and Mahomes. We haven't even talked about Taylor Swift, whether she's going to be there Thursday night or not. I haven't checked her tour schedule. And we talked about Kelce and Mahomes sort of owning the game back in January and where the stars come out and all that. Ravens got a lot of star players too. And I talked about turnovers and defense. We talked about Roquan Smith. And I saw the video of the offensive lineman, laughing at Roquan Smith in the locker room. I don't know if it was bad blood, but it's not good blood when you get bounced out of an AFC championship game. Marlon Humphrey trying to make his way, Ronnie Stanley trying to make his way, but what about Mark Andrews in this car accident and choppy year last year for him with health, opened the door for Isaiah Likely to become maybe a star, maybe he's a big contract guy when this is all over with at some point, but we talk about the running game, Derrick Henry. We haven't talked a whole lot about Zay Flowers. We certainly haven't talked a whole lot about Mark Andrews and this two tight end set that you've been out there watching practice. I don't know how much they're running it, but that would be something that would be an interesting thing the first month to see how the two tight ends are going to work with a neophyte offensive line.
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, it's natural that the focus is on Derrick Henry in terms of the big offseason signing and someone who is very well possibly going to the Hall of Fame and everything he's done in his career. But one thing you've heard me say, even as you and I have debated the impact of that move, you still got to throw the ball. You've got to throw the ball in 2024. You've got to do that at a high level. And the Ravens did that for most of 2024. I mean, you look at, not from a volume standpoint, we're over this, right? This isn't about how many passing yards per game Lamar has or this offense has. It's about efficiency. It's about explosive plays. It's about doing it on third down. When you are in third and seven and you need to throw the ball, can you do it? And the Ravens did that at a very high level last year. And that was even with Mark Andrews going down in mid-November. And the big reason why? Isaiah Likely played so very well down the stretch. But I think what was so lost in what happened in that game against Kansas City in late January was, yes, Mark Andrews came back, but he wasn't Mark Andrews yet, right? I mean, it was admirable that he got himself to the point where he was healthy enough to go out there. And, you know, he ran around, you know, he played some, caught one or two passes. I can't remember what it was off the top of my head, but clearly didn't make a major impact. But I think what you see now going into 2024 and what for me is the most interesting dynamic of their passing game is, do we see the Ravens make a more concerted effort to get Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews on the field at the same time? I know it's something they talked about a little bit 2 years ago. They talked about it more last year. But let's face it, go look at how the numbers broke down for Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely. Likely was an afterthought in their offense until Andrews got hurt in mid-November. And then, of course, he became the guy. So is there a way to incorporate more two tight looks where you have both those guys on the field? Now, a couple things that complicate that. It's not just as simple as, oh, we'll just put them both out on the field, right? You have to take into account route concepts, body types you have on the field, how the opposition is going to play them. Ideally, and this is where I still have some reservations about how much we'll see that and how impactful it'll be, even though I do think they're going to try it. And I do think you'll see it more than we saw in past years. In an ideal world, if you have two tight ends that differentiate enough where one guy is an inline guy, lining up in a three-point stance, and the other guy's lining up in the slot. And what comes to mind right now for me immediately is thinking back to Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. But, you know, Aaron Hernandez before murdering people and going to jail and all that. But you kind of remember, you know, Gronkowski put his hand in the ground. Three-point stance, Aaron Hernandez lining up in the slot. Yes, the Ravens can do that with those two guys, but neither one of them are your traditional inline tight end. They're much more slot options. So, yeah, that complicates things a little bit in terms of your effort to do that. But I think the overall point as it pertains to this passing game remains very similar to where it's been in the past. Zay Flowers, the clear-cut number one wide receiver, right? Had a really promising rookie year. Expectations are even higher this year. And I feel confident that Zay Flowers is going to be a big part of what they do because Lamar Jackson loves throwing him the football. And, you know, he warranted the targets last year, and I think he'll warrant more targets this year. But Mark Andrews, for 5 years now, 6 years, has been their true number one pass-catching target over that whole time. Not saying that that's necessarily going to change, even if it becomes 1 and 1A with him and Zay Flowers. But the question has always been, whether it was Hollywood Brown and Mark Andrews in the early years or now Zay Flowers and Mark Andrews, the question is, who is the number three? Is it going to be Rashad Bateman? You know, I believe it. I'll believe it when I see it, right? I think Bateman can contribute. I think he can be a part of what they do. But until I see it, it still feels way more complimentary than anything else. So that's where we do bring Isaiah Likely into the conversation and say, does he become the and again, wide receiver versus tight end, you know, you can almost drop that distinction because both Andrews and Likely play more like hybrid wide receivers. I mean, they really do, right? I mean, that's why we see Patrick Ricard line up as a blocking tight end so much in this offense because he's the best out of any other tight ends slash fullbacks that can do it. But can Isaiah Likely emerge to be more of a legitimate number three pass catching option when Mark Andrews is healthy and on the field? And I think that is such an interesting dynamic for them because, you know, last year they pivoted big time from where they were with Greg Roman at the end, which was a lot of 22 personnel, two running backs, 21 personnel, two running backs, one tight end. And of course, Ricard was, you know, technically a fullback, but lining up as a tight end. But last year they ran way more 11 personnel. So way more three wide receiver sets. I don't think they're going to drop that because I think some of this is also when you spread out in three wide receiver sets, what does that also do, Nestor? It means you're going to have a lighter box and that's going to make things easier for this offensive line. It's going to make things easier for Derrick Henry. It's going to make things easier for Lamar Jackson when he takes off and scrambles. So I don't think they're going to, like, I don't think 12 personnel is going to become this massive, overwhelming, you know, majority of what they do. But I do think you're going to see it more. And again, both these guys are more slot type pass catching targets anyway. So, you know, you can almost line up in pseudo 11 personnel and it's still those two guys are both lined up as receivers essentially. So I am interested to see how that works. I do think a major point of emphasis for them this offseason was Todd Monken to design more route concepts and combinations to take advantage of those two guys on the field at the same time, way more frequently than we've seen in the past. So I am curious to see how that's going to work out. And I think that's something that could be a major plus for this offense. If you're talking in terms of, okay, how do things evolve in year two with Todd Monken? We've talked about Derrick Henry, you know, of course, on the rushing side of things, that's a massive change and a massive addition. But on the passing side of things, I do look at the Isaiah Likely, Mark Andrews combo possibility, and that's intriguing. You know, it's got to come to fruition, and it's got to make sense. And again, it's not quite as simple as some have made it out to be, because, you know, neither one of those guys are at their best lining up in a three-point stance. But that doesn't mean you can't do it. It doesn't mean it won't work. That doesn't mean it won't be successful. But I think that is an intriguing element to ponder as we're looking at and imagining how this offense might look different from last year, which, keep in mind, up until the AFC Championship game, had been a very successful first season under Todd Monken.
You know, I'll be writing a letter to John Harbaugh at some point. DaCosta will get his letter this week. And if you haven't read our work at Baltimore Positive, I've been writing about media credentials and access and just letters to people that I have no access to speak to, like David Rubenstein and Eric DaCosta and different people. The Harbaugh thing, look, I could go back and forth. Certainly his integrity, I would tell him to his face. I'll tell his wife. I'll tell his brother, anybody, any listener. He's a fraud, integrity-wise. So but football-wise and football smarts-wise, the Ricard thing, of all the things that I would put on John and through this, look, Lamar at the top, they decided to go with this offense. They decided to change their personnel. They did it as an organization. John's been a part of that. But I think of Pat Ricard being a defensive guy and John Harbaugh liking the notion that he could play in the offense. He started with Flacco, right? I mean, he has really – he was doing shows at Greenmount Station with us before the plague. He's been around a long time. He's gone to Pro Bowls. It feels like, well, they got Derrick Henry. They got two tight ends now. He would be gone. He's the most interesting guy in all the Harbaugh years of finding a player in a role that's sort of weird. And he's like a wet boogie. He's not going away. He's unique. And I don't know how they're going to use him, but the notion that they still kept him around says to me that they see value in him in this offense. And they're going to try to utilize that value because he's a really unique football player in the history of all the football players here, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's been fascinating to see how his role has evolved, you know, going back from the very beginning, but even going from Greg Roman to Todd Monken. I mean, if you recall at the beginning of training camp last year, they actually messed around and worked Ricard as an offensive lineman. Now it only lasted like 2 days, but there was a lot of question as far as how much he was going to play, what his role was going to look like. I already mentioned the transition from them running more 21 personnel to 11 personnel this past year. But what we've seen with Patrick Ricard is really his roles evolved from the sense of, you know, Todd Monken's not using a fullback all that much in the traditional sense. You know, there's been a lot of talking, believe me, I'm curious and we'll see it, but I don't think we're going to see it a ton of Patrick Ricard lining up as a fullback and I formation with Derrick Henry and blocking for him. I don't think you're going to see that in a traditional sense a whole lot. But what we have,
I think that's a hard thing to stop if it's designed well.
It
and
is.
You have Lamar at the mesh. I mean, like
it is, but it's a lot of body, right? I mean, that's a lot of traffic right there too.
But if you need 2 yards,
I'm just saying that's not going to be their base package, right? Like you're not going to see them do that 70% of the time, right?
But I think it could be their base package with 8 minutes left to go and they have the ball in a 9-point lead and, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust and you can't stop it. Like literally. And if you try to stop it, Lamar might go around the back end and get 38 on your goal.
Sure. No, I'm not saying that we're not going to see that. But what I'm trying to explain is how Patrick Ricard's role has evolved in this offense, transitioning from Greg Roman, which was much more fullback and some inline tight end, to what he did last year. And, you know, you can go to sites like Pro Football Focus or any of the analytics sites that kind of chart personnel groupings and where players line up. Patrick Ricard was way more inline blocking tight end last year than he was fullback. I know in an ideal sense, and I've mentioned this to you in passing as we were going through mini camp and training camp, ideally, I think the Ravens would like to be in a position where they can move back to having a Nick Boyle kind of a blocking tight end in their offense, who would also be a bigger threat as a receiver than what Ricard is. And I think they've been hoping that Charlie Kohler can be that guy. Based on what we saw in the preseason, I don't know if Charlie Kohler's ready to be that guy. So I think what we're going to see is Patrick Ricard continuing to be their main blocking tight end quite a bit. Now, when I say blocking tight end, that doesn't mean that he's just lining up 3-point stance next to Ronnie Stanley or next to Patrick McCary or next to Roger Rosengarten, and that's it. Sometimes that's motioning across the formation, motioning from tight end, off the line tight end to the backfield and looking like a fullback or vice versa. So there's different ways to use him, but he's still going to be a chess piece of what they use. And look, his usage last year wasn't as strong as it was at his peak usage under Greg Roman, but he's still going to be a big part of what they do. And it is amazing to see the evolution of him because at this time last year, there was a lot of question just how much Ricard was going to play. And, some of that also factored in that their offensive line a year ago, and that's where it kind of brings us back. Everything comes back to the offensive line at the end of the day. But a lot of that is also they needed Patrick Ricard on the field to help in pass protection and to help block. And they'd like to get to a point where they can feel good about holding up in five-man protection, and that's that, because that adds even more explosiveness to your offense and upside to your offense. But this offensive line might not be ready for that, especially early in the season. So they're still very happy to have Patrick Ricard. Again, I don't know how often he's going to play. I certainly don't expect him to be out there 90% of the time, like he sometimes felt like he was when Greg Roman was running the show. But he can play fullback, he can play tight end, he can play off the line, in line, motion out, motion from tight end to fullback, play a little bit of H back. I mean, he can do a lot for you. He's not going to catch a ton of passes, but he can catch. He can run with the ball. We saw a couple big plays last year when he got the ball in space when the defense is trying to account for everyone else. So yeah, Patrick Ricard remains a really fun player, and I'm guessing his time with the Ravens probably isn't too long at this stage of his career and where the Ravens are going fundamentally, but they're still really glad to have him, and he's still going to be important to what they try to do, especially with the unknown that comes with this offensive line right now, and knowing that, yeah, you might need to run more max protect or things of that nature. And certainly if you need to do that, then Patrick Ricard's going to be a big part of that.
Marlon Humphrey, my favorite Raven. Defense, passing game. You mentioned Trenton Simpson running around with Travis Kelce. I don't know what their plan is going to be for Travis Kelce, but they better have one. Better be better than they had what they had in the fourth quarter and third quarter of in January. The secondary, we've talked a lot about it and moving parts and injured bodies and everybody from Darby and guys that are available, guys that aren't available, guys that are gone, Geno Stone, the other people. Where are you with the secondary and what they've done in? And we'll find out Thursday right around 9:30. How things are going. What are we going to see from the secondary? Because this was, and I'm sure Eric talked about this last week to you, not to me, but they had to put some effort into that this offseason. That the whole defense and lots of moving parts with free agents and different things, pass rush with Clowney, middle of the defense, Queen out, Simpson in, back of the defense. Marlon Humphrey, and I know he loves him some Brandon Stevens, who thinks he's going to get the next $80 million, cornerback deal because the money's out there. A lot at stake for the backside of this defense and how Kyle Hamilton's going to be used, which really isn't as a safety.
Yeah. I mean, I look on paper, I think this has the potential, and potential is not worth a whole lot at the end of the day, right? You have to go out and do it. And you're always, you're an injury or two at the wrong spot away from suddenly having a way different outlook. But on paper, this defense looks very deep, or this secondary looks deep. I think the upside is obvious. I think of course, you have to stay healthy. And when you talk about Marlon Humphrey coming off of an injury-plagued year, when we've talked about Marcus Williams, and he's played well when he's been healthy and on the field, but he's missed a lot of time the last couple of years. I mean, Kyle Hamilton has been a warrior playing through stuff, but he's gotten nicked up. Even over the course of the spring and summer, he was nicked up some. So always understanding that health is paramount, right? I mean, and that's why going back to Ozzie Newsome after going through what they kind of went through in 13 and 14 and 15 with not being deep enough and then injuries hammering them in the secondary. From that point on, they've made a concerted effort to be as deep as possible in the secondary. When you draft Nate Wiggins, when you draft TJ Tampa in the fourth round, when you bring in a former Pro Bowl safety in Eddie Jackson to replace Geno Stone as your number three safety, when you re-sign Arthur Millette, although Millette having his knee scoped, he's on the IR to start the year. He's expected back in October. But they have lots of pieces here. They have the ability, and I think the thing I expect out of this secondary is really what we saw last year, which is to be as multiple as they can possibly be and to offer as many looks as they possibly can. And I think it's going to look different from week to week, series to series, personnel package to personnel package. I think they have the ability to deceive and confuse quarterbacks on the back end, whether it's lining up looking like you're playing zone and then pivoting to man and vice versa. I mean, we saw that all last year. And that was more so, and I say this with no disrespect to Jadeveon Clowney or Kyle Van Noy or Justin Madubuike or Odafe Owe or whoever you want to talk about with a pass rush that led the league in sacks last year. But their ability to confuse pre-snap and post-snap quarterbacks as far as what they're looking at in terms of coverage, in terms of what they're looking at in terms of sim pressures and, whether you're going to actually blitz or look like you're going to blitz and then drop back into coverage, that is the biggest factor at work here. And if Zach Orr, and look, Zach Orr is going to need some time probably to settle in the same way that Mike McDonald had some hiccups his first half season as coordinator before he became what he's become, which is now the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. But they're going to try to do all those things again. And I'm not guaranteeing that it's going to go smoothly on Thursday night because it's Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, and you've got a lot of new moving parts and a new defense coordinator who's never called plays before. But collectively, that's still going to be the outlook and the goal for this secondary is to use two or three different guys at the nickel and line up in nickel, line up in three safety looks, line up in the dime, move Kyle Hamilton all over the field, whether he's lining up as a safety, as a linebacker, as an edge player. I mean, we've seen all that as a slot. We've seen him do all of that. Kyle Hamilton could probably do everything but line up at nose tackle. I mean, that's literally, I think he could do all of that. I mean, that's how talented and how versatile he is. So, this secondary is deep. I'm optimistic, but that's also acknowledging you need Marlon Humphrey to stay on the field. Even if it's not peak Marlon Humphrey from 5 years ago in terms of his play, even last year when he was on the field, Marlon Humphrey wasn't bad. He did not have a bad season. I reject that. If you go back and look, he played pretty darn well when he was on the field, but he missed about half the season with injuries. You can't have that. Same with Marcus Williams. With him on the back end. So I think they have done a good job addressing their depth by adding Eddie Jackson and drafting Nate Wiggins, who probably isn't going to play a ton on Monday night, but I fully expect him to play a lot as the year goes on because I think he's that talented. I think they're that excited about him. But you have, you go three or four deep at corner, you go three or four deep at safety. I think Ardarius Washington is another. Below the radar chess piece that's going to move around and could also be, a sneaky good player for them in some sub packages. So I'm optimistic about the secondary, and if there's one question I have about the defense, yeah, it's the edge rusher depth, right? I mean, you have Van Noy, you have Owe. Then after that, it's, hey, what does David Ajabo look like? What does Tavius Robinson look like? Those guys were healthy and showed some nice things in the preseason, but it's the preseason.
I don't expect their pass rush to be as good as it was last year, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be tough. Right. I mean, are they going to lead the league in sacks again? It'd be tough for me to expect that, right? Especially losing Clowney. That said, again, they didn't lead the league in pass rush last year because Jadeveon Clowney was all universe. He was really good. But it was still so much about their scheme, so much about the sum of the parts. This defense is such a sum being greater than the parts defense with how they play. It's such an ensemble effort that I think is going to continue. And I think Trenton Simpson's going to rush the passer in the way that Patrick Queen did on occasion. And Queen had, three, four, five sacks in some of his last couple seasons with the Ravens. So, it's going to be much of the same. I think Zach Orr has a very similar DNA to Mike McDonald in how he wants to play defense. I don't think it's necessarily going to be hiccup free, but I still expect this defense to be really good And I think come end of the season, am I going to predict them to win the triple crown again, meaning they lead the league in points allowed, turnovers, and sacks? No, I'm not expecting that again. Do I expect them to be a top five defense when it's all said and done? Assuming they stay healthy, I absolutely expect that. So it's going to look a little different. Again, you got to fill the void of Clowney. You got to fill the void of Geno Stone. Eddie Jackson, I think, is, on paper, looks promising to be able to do that. Even if he's not going to lead the AFC in picks like Geno Stone did last year, but there's still so much to like about this defense. And I only mentioned him in passing, but Madubuike, again, the newly renamed Nnamdi Madubuike. Is he going to have 13 sacks again? That's ambitious, but do I expect him to continue to be an absolute force rushing the passer from the interior? Yeah. And I'll give you the other guy. I haven't mentioned his name yet. Remember this, and I'm not the only one who's made this prediction, but the guy that I think with their front seven, the guy that I really expect to take a step forward, I think Travis Jones is going to be a way bigger part of what they're doing, even in passing situations. I think you're going to see, and we started seeing this as the
Well, they
year went
love him,
on.
right?
Yeah, I think as the year went on last year, you started to see more and more of this. But I think when you see them get into nickel and dime, their interior rushers, Michael Pierce is going to come off the field. It's not going to be Brent Urban. It's not going to be Broderick Washington. It's going to be Madubuike, and it's going to be Travis Jones. And I'm not saying Travis Jones is going to have 10 sacks. Let me be clear on that. I'm not expecting anything crazy, but I think you're going to see him become more and more of a household name as part of this defense, and would not at all be shocked if he's, and I think the depth chart even lists him as the starter as the five technique, which he's not really always going to line up in that spot necessarily, but he is someone that they can move around the defensive front. And I think he's someone that they have some really high hopes for. And I think quietly, didn't necessarily have the big splash plays, but I think his first couple of years, I think you saw good things from Travis Jones, and I think they're really expecting him to maybe not break out like Madubuike did last year, but maybe the year before when Madubuike had a really good season, not a Pro Bowl season, but a good season. I could definitely see Travis Jones being that guy for them up front. And if he does that, then that's going to make that collective pass rush that much better. You get that heat up the middle, you making a quarterback move his feet from interior pressure, then boy, things become that much easier for those edge guys to get home.
Luke Jones is here. He will be there at Camden Yards all weekend. We will be monitoring all things Chiefs and Ravens. Of course, the Raiders next week. Luke, I know you're going to find this hard to believe, but like they're going to play more games after Thursday night. I mean, they're actually going to play
Really?
Friday night.
Really?
That Brazil Friday night. I got your Peacock right here on that. My wife's like, "We're going to watch the game, right?" I'm like, "Where are we going? Does Costas have Peacock? Who's got Peacock?" The rest of the division. I mean, I hadn't even looked at any. I guess this is the funny. Steelers play in Atlanta. Well, for me on like Sunday, I'm trying to figure out like, do I have the red zone anymore? Do I have to give them money? Where are the games? Does CBS still have games? Does Fox still have games? Steelers Falcons at 1 o'clock, Patriots Bengals at 1 o'clock. And when I think of Patriots, I'm like, oh yeah, they're not the Patriots anymore.
Yeah.
The Browns play the 4 o'clock game against the Cowboys, 4:25 game, and we'll see the Cowboys in 2 weeks as well. The rest of the division and the rest of the league, and Aaron Rodgers is going to San Francisco on Monday night, and the Rams are going to play the Lions. We'll have the Stafford Bowl on Sunday night. They've laid this out, but there's going to be a lot of football even after the Ravens play on Sunday night. Where are you on the rest of the league? We're seeing the two best teams on Thursday night. We know, like, it's like none of the other teams in the league matter other than the Chiefs and the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, I think rest of the, and I'll probably stick to the AFC more so. NFC, 49ers are still there. I mean, obviously they've had some weird things happen, even off the field with their first round pick with the shooting, and but Aiyuk getting signed, Trent Williams, his situation. I mean, it's a
Aiyuk didn't
team
sign with
that.
the Steelers. I'm just making
No, he
sure.
did not. He did not, despite some reports that were out there on social media at a couple different points. But I think in the AFC, it's still Ravens Chiefs. I think until they prove otherwise, I think the Bills, it feels like the Bills have taken a step back with some of what they've lost, even some of their injuries. They lost Matt Milano, their star linebacker, again to an injury. It sounds like he's going to be out till late in the season. I don't think the Bills are fallen off the face of the earth, but they've got a lot to prove. I mean, we've talked about wide receivers in this town how many years? But you know, you lose Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis, then you know, it's Keon Coleman. You know, they've got Shakir, who I think is interesting, but there's a lot of question marks there. But they still have Josh Allen, and he's still one of the three or four best quarterbacks in football. So I'm not
That's a
writing
tough
them
game
off.
for us next later in the month.
Of course, of course, absolutely. Especially if the offensive line is, you know, as we've talked about at length, and we'll continue to talk about the
Well,
O-line.
Cowboys, Bills, Bengals, back to back to back. You know,
Sure.
like I keep saying, if they're 4-1 when the Ravens start playing
And you
or the
feel
Orioles start
great.
playing playoffs, it's going to be an unbelievable start. If it's 3-2, it's still decent.
Yeah.
You know, but it starts with Thursday night. But this, the Ravens have the tough schedule this year, I think.
Well, they had the first place schedule. And, you know, that lends itself into talking about the team I was going to mention next, the Cincinnati Bengals. Joe Burrow's back and healthy. I think they have the last place schedule, which, look, and you know this, I'm not explaining this to you. You know this. Difference between a first place schedule and his last place schedule is a couple games, right? It's a couple games. But if you think the Ravens and the Bengals are relatively similar in terms of their aptitude and potential in 2024, a couple games could be the difference of who wins the division and who's a wild
But
card.
there are a couple
So,
games against Kansas City and Buffalo, and you know, that's kind of how this
sure.
works.
Right, exactly. So I think the Bengals are really interesting on that front. I think they fortified their defense a little bit, especially at safety. You know, Geno Stone being part of that solution for them. Do I think Geno is going to be a Pro Bowl safety for them? No. You know, I think part of him leading the AFC in interceptions last year was it was kind of a perfect storm kind of deal. But hey, he's a good
Well, you
player.
mentioned the ensemble and the symphony of the
Sure,
defense.
no doubt. But I think what's interesting, if you're looking for, to me, the caution flag, so to speak, for the Bengals. One, Joe Burrow's got to stay healthy in the same way that Lamar Jackson has to stay healthy. Amazingly, the last 4 years, you know, since Burrow entered the league, there has not been a season yet where those two quarterbacks, the two star quarterbacks in the AFC North, have both been healthy at the end of the year. You know, one or the other's been out in
Yeah, I want to
December.
see a Burrow-Jackson playoff
Sure.
matchup like we saw Ravens-Steelers forever,
Yeah,
right?
I mean, that'd be great, right? I mean, it's a budding rivalry that's just lacking that at this point in time. But what I think's fascinating and what's interesting to watch, T. Higgins on the franchise tag. Ja'Marr Chase, it's been a weird summer with him, like this hold-in thing. He wants a new contract. Zach Taylor said about a week to 10 days ago, like that everything was fine and he's ready to go. And then suddenly he's not on the practice field. I mean, you know, it's dicey.
It's
And
the
you know,
Brown family too.
I was just, you literally took the words out of my mouth. It's Mike Brown. So that's, you know, if there's something about the Bengals that could make things weird for them, you know, it's certainly that because you have two legitimate number one wide receivers. I mean, T. Higgins is their number two, but he's a number one in 25 of the other 32 teams in the NFL. I mean, he's that good. He's a legit number one. He's a fantastic player. But so there's that. So with the Bengals, I think this division for me, and I say this, you know, it probably comes across as disrespectful, but the quarterback situation. This division is still the haves and the have-nots. It's Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow, and then it's whatever the Browns and the Steelers are going to get out of their quarterbacks. I think they have good rosters. I think the Browns have a really good roster overall, but what the heck is Deshaun Watson at this point? You know, is his shoulder healthy? Even if it is he going to ever be anything close to what he was 4 or 5 years ago? I mean, this guy was a top five, top six, top seven kind of quarterback in football
It
five,
was 4 years
6 years
ago,
ago.
dude.
And
Yeah.
right, exactly.
When's the
I mean,
last time he ran around and looked like Lamar? It's at least 3 years ago.
you know, and his high water mark for the Browns has been his second half in Baltimore last year. And that's when he injured his shoulder and was out for the year then. So I don't trust that, even though I
Opening
think
the door for Joseph Vincent Flacco. Yes.
well, he's in Indianapolis now.
I know.
So
Yeah.
yeah. But
Well, because they couldn't stand it. I mean, you know, like
I mean, it
they
could
have a
be
$200
Jameis
million
Winston.
quarterback.
It
He
could
would
be
have.
Jameis Winston.
Yeah,
Yeah.
the fact that the Browns didn't bring Flacco back is shameful on them. You know, like they sort of acquiesced to the quarterback situation there because he couldn't have handled it, but
Well, they gave
Flacco
him
was far better
230.
than him.
I hear you, but at the same time, I mean, it's a $230 million guaranteed contract to their franchise quarterback. I mean, he's playing, right? At least through this year, you know. I mean, if it changes after that, then
I
that's a
don't know.
different
Orioles got an
conversation. But
$11 million close you've already written off three
oh,
times this week.
that's
Hey,
not
the
even the
same
same
question, dude. Do you want to
stratosphere.
win or do you not? If you want to win, you don't play Deshaun Watson.
Well, Joe Flacco's not taking anyone to the
I
promised
hear you.
land either.
I'm going to defend Joe while I'm wearing
Oh,
purple.
look, I love Joe. Like, and look, he's in Indianapolis. I mean, if Anthony Richardson gets if it goes like it did last year, Joe's gonna be playing by week three in Indy. So, but the Browns, you know, what the heck is Deshaun Watson at this point? What is going on there? You know, I mean, if he doesn't have to be a top five quarterback for them to be a playoff team, can he be average? If he can be average, they'll probably be in the playoffs. If he's not average, then who knows? And then with Pittsburgh, I think Russell Wilson's on borrowed time. I think Justin Fields is going to be the starting quarterback there. And I'm not saying Justin Fields is going to be great either, but they're in the same position they've been in since the end of the Roethlisberger era. Like
They're a
they,
7-10 team, right? Six and
I
they're no
mean, you
good.
say that, but out of reverence to and respect to Mike Tomlin,
They'll be seven and
they'll be
seven, but
9-8, right? Or they'll be, you know, they'll be 9-8 and they'll be there with looking for the last wild card. But I think their roster otherwise is pretty good. You know, wide receivers question mark. You know, certainly some question marks, but by and large, that's a roster that if they had a legit franchise quarterback, you'd be talking about them. Maybe not exactly at the same level as the Ravens and Bengals, but close. But until they've got the quarterback thing figured out, you know, that's why I said haves and have-nots. And when I say have-nots, I don't mean that the Browns and the Steelers can't be one of the three wild cards, but I mean serious Super Bowl contender. Ravens and the Bengals are both that. Browns and Steelers are not. So, but that said, hey, if you're the Ravens, right now they play Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh November 17th. I almost said Heinz Field, whatever it's called, Acrisure Stadium or whatever they're calling it these days. And then they play
Give me
home
a
against
cookie,
Pittsburgh.
will you, when they let you in? Please get
And
a
then
cookie for this
they
dude.
play home against Pittsburgh week 16, you know, so December 21st, you know, that Saturday game before their Wednesday game. Ravens are on a losing streak against Pittsburgh. You got to figure that out. I mean, you want to talk about the what in the world is going on kind of scenario that you talk about with the Ravens the last few years. It's how they have not beaten Pittsburgh because I don't think the Steelers are very good. I haven't thought that for
Well, Lamar
a
hasn't
few
played that
years
game
now.
half the time, right?
Well, but even when he has, like, remember the early October game, which, by the way, Lamar, he threw the pick intended for Beckham at the end of that game. But up until that point, Lamar played a really good football game, and his receivers, you're the one who tosses out the word disgraceful a lot. Not, you know, that's not in terms of describing a performance. The receivers in that game, that was a disgraceful performance because of how many they dropped. But that's what's happened against the Steelers in recent years. I mean, even more so, and it's always been a weird rivalry with unexpected things happening. I know that. I know the Ravens Steelers history, but the last few years, it's been even weirder in that sense, in the way that early October game last year where Lamar did play, the Ravens should have beaten them by 17 points at a minimum. And somehow you left them in the game and then you let Kenny Pickett throw one over Marlon Humphrey's head. I mean, just inexplicable. The Ravens got to knock that racket off. If you want to be number one seed again, if you want to beat the Bengals in this division, you got to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, come on now. Enough is enough on that front. So I don't care who's playing, whether it's Russell Wilson or Justin Fields at quarterback. You better beat the Steelers this year because they're not that good. They're not terrible. Let's be clear. They're not that good, in my opinion. So at some point, it's like knock that off. And you're right. You know, I'm not even. Let's be clear. When I'm talking about this, I'm not talking about the week 18 game. Who cares about that? That I'm not talking about. I'm talking about the October game. I'm talking about the two games. You know, the game previous. You know, in the previous season, where, you know, you look at that and you just say, wait, how are you guys losing to the Steelers again? You know, when Lamar's playing, like how's that
Well,
happening?
having
So.
Lamar upright at Thanksgiving would be
That's
important.
huge.
Yeah, I mean
Yeah,
that would be a big part
I
of
mean,
it.
sure. So.
By the way, I looked up disgraceful because I'm an old school writer, right? I'm having a reunion of my sports first colleagues from 40 years ago. It'll be 40 years on September 21st that Sports First from the News American folded. It was my first job. I was 15 years old. Lots of legendary people. Bernie Miklas, Jeff Gordon, people that went on to great, great things in the sports writing world. Barry Levine, John Hawkins at golf. All of these folks, I've invited them all back. And I used to have a thesaurus on my desk. It was actually Sandy McKee's desk down at 501 North Calvert Street. And I would always look for the right word. You know what I mean? Because I'm a writer, and disgraceful is a word that you have now. But forget sports, forget the Ravens. The word disgraceful, I looked it up. It says here, Donald Trump. No, it doesn't say that. it says shockingly unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, that's disgraceful is a word that maybe has taken on a bad connotation. Shockingly unacceptable. Shockingly. It's kind of like Chad Steele, disgraceful. Greg Bader, disgraceful. Everybody involved with the Ravens who no longer speaks to me after 30 years, disgraceful. I call it that. Shockingly unacceptable. It's shockingly unacceptable. So anytime I say disgraceful, I just want you to fill in shockingly unacceptable, because that sounds a lot nicer.
I got you.
That's shockingly unacceptable. Well, that's terrible. No, that's disgraceful. Oh, my God. It sounds murderous. So
I'm just saying
disgraceful
that
is a really good word because it speaks your eyes open and you say, that's shockingly unacceptable. That's disgraceful. Yes.
I gotcha. And look, I wasn't criticizing you. I'm just saying that's a word that you use a lot in describing poor performance on the field. It's not I guess my connotation.
So if I call Adley Rutschman's offense disgraceful, it's shockingly unacceptable. I am shocked and it's unacceptable.
I understand what you're saying, but I think there are other ways to me, disgraceful is jaking it.
Like okay, fair enough.
That's more.
Okay.
And I would say disgraceful is like off the field, poor behavior, legal, you know, breaking the law, athletes doing lowbrow things, executives doing, that's what but it's fine. I was just saying to you, I was actually just borrowing your word to show how outraged I was.
I'm going to use the word discrimination this week, right? And when I bring discrimination up, every old white guy as a Hispanic guy, well, you can't, they don't let you in because you're not Venezuelan. Then why don't they let me in? So I looked up discrimination. I actually did this for an old white guy partner of mine this week who was saying, you can't say discrimination. Well, you can when you're Hispanic and they don't let you in and you're the only Hispanic journalist in the history of the city. They don't let it. But the real definition of discrimination is recognition and understanding of the difference between one thing and another. That's discrimination, to be discriminate. So they recognize and understand that you're a professional journalist and I'm not. So that's it. So it is funny with words that you use words. I use disgraceful and discrimination. Two disses this week. I've been dissed a lot lately. Maybe I should change my name to Disnester instead of Sir Nester. But you know, words matter. And I appreciate that you made me look up disgraceful to make sure that I really was using it right. And I am using discrimination absolutely perfectly for everybody out there. So I am a wordsmith. I don't like to get it wrong. And
I wasn't,
I do think
and
disgraceful
I wasn't,
is a strong word. I agree with you. In a sports on the field, disgraceful is you don't try. Right. I would agree with that.
Right, right. And again, I wasn't suggesting you use it incorrectly or anything like that. I was just saying that's a word that you use more frequently in that forum than I do. But I was borrowing that word to show you how outraged I was with how the Ravens receivers played.
Outrage is a word. Everybody's outraged about everything. Let me look up outrage, what the actual definition to that is.
And in this day and age, we're outraged
strong
about everything.
Reaction of anger, shock, or indignation. There you go. All right, good. Words.
I would say in this day and age, especially when you look at social media, whether we're talking sports, politics, whatever walk of life we're talking about, outrage is used so frequently that it's no longer actually outrage because it's just become the norm. It's just
I'm guessing synonyms that start to use affront, insult, offended. I am offended by you, Chris Ullman. I'm insulted by you, Greg Bader. I'm affronted by you. Chad's sister was like, affronted. I'm affronted. That's it. There's a college word for you. Outrage. That's the word, though. Yeah. Luke, you know we're both writers. We have the best words. I have the best words of any word. So we'll get to, we got a lot of fun this week.
Yeah.
This is you and I've known each other a long, long time. This is when it gets to be fun, when we have this giant game on Thursday night with a giant outcome that you're gonna have to stuff on for 10 days before you get to beat the Raiders and everybody has a party around here, you hope. And the baseball thing, it's been as good a year for sports this year, and especially a year to me for me to be locked out, which I'm writing about, and I will remain outraged by that and disgusted and disgraced and all that other thing. But this has been a great, great, great year to be a Baltimore sports fan. And I think Thursday night is something because of the loss 8 months ago, people are looking for, because there's been so much baseball and ups and downs and where the Orioles are. And look, this would be even less fun if the Orioles had a 12-game lead right now, to some degree, because it wouldn't be interesting from that perspective. It'd be easier from the fan base.
Yeah.
But there are bumps in the road in this journey on the baseball side, and whatever the football team's going to do. Football team's already had its bump in the road. They ran the ball three times and got their ass kicked at home in an AFC Championship game this year, and they have to figure out how to get through that. But this is so much more fun than being, let's say, the Miami Marlins and the Miami Dolphins, or pick any city, Philadelphia. Yeah, pick any city. We're having as much fun right now being sports fans, and we just invested $1.2 billion of our money. And if I were a real reporter, I'd actually ask these people what they're doing with the money. But this is a great, great, great anticipation of sports on the front end of this football game Thursday night for me and October.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because and I'm working on this at BaltimorePositive.com right now in terms of trying to contextualize what I think Thursday night's game actually means for the Baltimore Ravens. Because, it's week one, all that, and we've been over that. But the term that I used is this was a really excruciating offseason for the Ravens. The Ravens, their fans, just in trying to live with what happened in late January, right? So you have that. You have the Orioles with these last 2 months of struggles being what they've been. But I'm so glad you brought this up because enjoy the journey. The expectations for both teams right now are really high. And I get it. Doesn't mean doesn't mean the Orioles are going to make a deep October run. Doesn't mean the Ravens are going to go to the Super Bowl this year. But when you have expectations like this for both teams, boy, it's been fleeting. I've been in sports media now. I've known you since 2009. 2012, which the Orioles were a surprise Cinderella team that year. Ravens won the Super Bowl. 2014, Orioles were on their way to winning their first division title since 97. And the Ravens, we're still 2 years removed from the Super Bowl, Gary Kubiak year, all that. So I'll give that year. By 16, I think the Ravens, were in the playoff hunt, but, certainly were more mediocre than elite. The Orioles were run. Kind of winding down the Buck Dan Duquette era. And then we know the Orioles were horrendous from 17 through 21. COVID was in there. But now, the last 2 years, you've had the Orioles last year on the way to being the best team in the American League and the Ravens having the best team in the NFL in the regular season. Now, October and January, respectively, did not turn out the way you wanted it to. And now, back-to-back years, these teams are still in that stratosphere, whether the Ravens or whether the Orioles are going to win the division or not, whether the Ravens are going to be the number one seed again or not, they're in that conversation. Boy, enjoy the journey. This is fun. It's fun. I know the offensive line's nerve-wracking right now, but this is fun. I know the bullpen and the injuries are nerve-wracking for the Orioles right now, but this is fun. Let's make sure we're seeing the forest for the trees here, in understanding just how good Baltimore sports fans have it right now. Doesn't mean it's perfect. Doesn't mean expectations aren't there. Doesn't mean that you can't be frustrated on a given night or a given week. But boy, we've all sat through and lived through lean years, especially on the baseball side. So for the Ravens to be kicking off Thursday night on the heels of disappointing finish, but a 13-4 season nonetheless, and the Orioles to be right there with the Yankees for not just the AL East, but the American League lead. Boy, these are good times, and we'll see what happens moving forward. But enjoy the journey, because if it's all about the outcome, then boy, that's being a sports fan's not much fun if the outcome is the only validation you get for all of the hours we all put into this in some shape or form.
Whether it's watching on TV or whether it's actually doing your job, have fun, enjoy the games. For everybody out there, Luke's going to be monitoring. I'm going to be monitoring. We're going to be working. I'm going to be writing. It's an interesting fall of sports here with Ruben Splash and Bisciotti and Team Elias and Team DaCosta trying to bring us parades down Pratt Street. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.